Good afternoon. I'm Hannah Levine. You've got it tuned to the home stretch only here on 91.3 FM KXCI Tucson, streaming online everywhere at kxci.org. It's just past 4 o'clock on Monday, which means it's time to welcome my regular guest, Chris Carey, who volunteers his time each week to select and research our classic picks and then comes in on Monday to share those findings with us. If you are a regular listener to the show, you will not be surprised to hear that I am extremely, extremely excited about this week's pick, The Stooges Funhouse. Came out on almost this very day, 50 years ago. Holy moly. Thanks so much for bringing the Stooges in this week.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. Yeah, this came out. Tomorrow will have been 50 years that this album came out. And the Stooges, of course, formed in Ann Arbor, Michigan. A lot of people think they're a Detroit band, and they are essentially, but they were actually out of Ann Arbor. They formed in late 1967 by Iggy Pop and Dave Alexander, who played bass, and brothers Ron Ashton and Scott Ashton on guitar and drums. Iggy Pop was kind of always the leader of the band. He had got his start in high school playing drums in several Detroit area bands, even though he really didn't play any instruments in the Stooges. He did start playing drums. One of the bands he was with the longest, the Iguanas, is basically what he took his stage name Iggy from. He was born James Osterberg. He always kind of wanted to do some sort of new kind of blues. Of course, he was really into blues and jazz and early rock and roll. And he was heavily influenced by the Doors when he saw them in 1967, particularly Jim Morrison's stage antics. Initially, they were called the Psychedelic Stooges and actually played their first live show at a Halloween party where members of MC5 were at this party, and both the MC5 and the Stooges hit it off right from the get-go, and they ended up playing a lot of shows together all the way through 69. Pretty soon, they dropped the psychedelic and just became the Stooges, and they gained a reputation locally and soon regionally for their wild, primitive live performances. Iggy Pop would often cut himself on stage with shards of glass and smear peanut butter and hamburger and do all sorts of other crazy stuff, including diving from stage, and Iggy Pop often gets credited for inventing stage diving. At the time, so both them and MC5 were gaining some notoriety, and Elektra actually sent an A&R guy to check out the MC5, though. He didn't come to check out the Stooges. He came to check out the MC5, and while he was in Detroit, he saw the Stooges, and they decided to sign both the MC5 and the Stooges. But they did at the time. They thought that MC5 had a much bigger national appeal and offered them a $20,000 signing bonus and only the Stooges $5,000. In today's dollars, that was pretty decent money. I mean, $20,000 in today is $148,000, and $5,000 in 1967, 68 is about $37,000 today. And what's interesting about both the MC5 and the Stooges is they both were pretty influential in what became punk music, and they both only released 3 LPs. But what's interesting is that Elektra saw MC5 as the big diamond in the rough that would go on and do a lot, and it ended up being the Stooges. But not immediately. Both of these bands were kind of ahead of their time. The Stooges released their self-titled debut in 1969, and actually for a relatively new act, it did okay. It charted at 106 on the Billboard album chart. And what's funny, even though their first album is considered amazing, it's probably their least amazing of their first three, and it actually sold better than their second two records. It really didn't impress the label by the sales, even though it did chart, and it didn't impress the critics either. Most critics disavowed the Stooges, using words like loud and unimaginative, childish, tasteless. In retrospect, though, most critics now consider the Stooges, obviously, one of the biggest landmark proto-punk bands ever. Nobody called the music proto-punk back then. It's kind of a retroactive moniker that groups a lot of those bands from the late 60s and 70s that kind of came out of the garage scene and ended up influencing a lot of bands that then created punk and post-punk a decade later. Like the Stooges, the MC5 are considered archetypical proto-punk band, but Velvet Underground, New York Dolls, T-Rex, Roxy Music, Modern Lovers, some early David Bowie, Television, Mötley Crüe, these are all kind of proto-punk bands. Recording Funhouse took place May 11th through 25th, 1970 at Elektra Sound Studio in LA. The A&R guy that did sign the Stooges really thought their live set was pretty electric, but he didn't know how they were going to record it in the studio. They got a guy who hadn't produced a lot of records, but had a garage background. Don Gallucci was asked to produce this record, and Don Gallucci was keyboardist for the Kingsmen. And of course, the Kingsmen are known for their 1963 classic, Louie Louie. And so it was kind of cool that this guy was producing this record. And at first, they set up the Stooges in the studio like they would any other band, recording isolated tracks, you know, where you would record the drums one track, the bass one track, the guitar one track, the vocals with a boomed mic and earphones. And it was terrible. It didn't sound very good. The band wasn't that together. And so Gallucci decided to try to recreate what they got on stage. They stripped the studio of all the normal equipment and they set them up just like they were on stage with the bass and guitar amps right next to each other. Iggy sang out of a handheld mic. From a production standpoint, particularly in the late 60s, it was kind of distasteful to a lot of the record execs in that there was a lot of sound bleeding and it didn't sound nearly as slick as a lot of other stuff that was coming out at the time. I never saw the Stooges live in 1969. I was -1 at the time, you know, but I think he really did capture what they probably sounded like. This album is very raw and does have kind of a live feel to it. Interestingly, too, this is the only Stooges album that has saxophone on it. Steve McKay, a saxophonist who did tour with them a lot, he played on all three songs on the second side of this LP. Commercially, like the first record, this album didn't sell at all. Actually, it sold worse than the first record. Again, most of the critics didn't like it. They thought it was inaccessible and unimaginative. One of the few critics that really saw the genius of what the Stooges were doing was Lester Bangs, who's a famous music writer. He wrote for Cream, and I think he wrote some for Rolling Stone as well. And if anybody's watched Almost Famous, he's the music writer character played by Philip Seymour Hoffman. But Lester Bangs was one of the few critics that recognized how amazing the Stooges were. Over time, though, everybody has now agreed that Funhouse became a hugely influential record. And it's very important in the development of and shape of punk and post-punk. You know, and it's funny, a lot of people in that post-punk, punk realm consider this album their favorite album of all time. And that includes Joey Ramone, Jack White, Nick Cave, Henry Rollins, Marky Smith of The Fall. I really think that this album was just so ahead of its time that very few people recognized how amazing it was until a decade later.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the things I was going to say. We've discussed this phenomena about classic picks before, but I think that there is, you know, it's not a universal thing, obviously, but I think when a record comes along and a sound or an artist comes along that is really groundbreaking and really changing things up, the initial reaction is often not good because it's so challenging to what the cultural norms are at the time. So mm-hmm. People can't even necessarily see what they're ready for yet, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I don't think
so. It takes a little while to realize the worth of something that subverts things so greatly, if that makes sense.
It totally makes sense. And I just don't think a lot of people could wrap their mind around it. I mean, I was just talking about this with my wife, and what's amazing to me about the Stooges in this record is chronologically, the Stooges and what they were doing is much closer in time to Rock Around the Clock and Frank Sinatra than it is to modern day. Yet, if you heard this album and didn't know when it came out, it could sound like it came out 6 months ago. And that is pretty impressive to me, is that is an album that came out a bolt out of the blue, almost didn't sound like anything else. And it still sounds like it could be contemporary today. It was pretty amazing. All three of the first Stooges albums were amazing. Actually, what's funny is that Dave Alexander was kicked out of the band because they thought he was too drunk to play drums, but they were all doing heroin and they were all, their life set, I guess, started to suffer post Funhouse. Elektra decided to drop them in 1971, partly because of such poor sales and partly because of their drug fueled antics. But not long after that, Iggy Pop met David Bowie at Max's Kansas City, a famous club in New York City. They met and hit it off immediately. And Pop was convinced by Bowie to restart the Stooges. And that's when they added Iggy to the band, is when he reformed the Stooges. It became Iggy and the Stooges. And then they released Raw Power in 1973, which Bowie co-produced on that with Iggy Pop. And that album is equally as good as Funhouse. I might like that one slightly better, but all three Stooges albums I love. A lot of people, again, think Raw Power was amazing. I know that Kurt Cobain said numerous times that that was his favorite LP of all time. So following and in post-Stooges, most of the members of the band, they did a few things, but Iggy Pop finally started getting notoriety. And by 1977, when he went to West Berlin with David Bowie, and they worked together on the 1977 pair of albums, The Idiot and Lust for Life, I think that finally, by the late 70s, Iggy Pop was getting a lot of notice. And I think those two albums sealed the deal for a lot of people. They were convinced that Iggy Pop was a genius as far as music was concerned. In 2003, not long after Raw Power, the band broke up for the second time and didn't get back together until 2003. They did release a couple albums. They got some decent reviews. And then they disbanded again in 2016, following the deaths of Scott Ashton and Steve McKay. And actually, the only living member of the original Stooges lineup today is Iggy Pop. He's 73. The Stooges, like I said, they were ahead of their time, even considered weird, even repugnant by a lot of their contemporaries and critics. But they ended up influencing, you know, throngs of bands, and they have legions of fans. And Iggy Pop has become a cultural icon. I think it's kind of interesting, too. The Stooges, along with the Velvet Underground, were kind of the first bands that really embraced that dark side, underside of rock and roll. I mean, those were the two original sex, drugs, and rock and roll kind of bands, in my opinion.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I also think what you're saying about their influence can't be understated. And I think it's an important distinction. They were influential at the time, but even more so later, and they still continue to inspire new artists.
All the time.
You know, I bet every other weekend somewhere in this country, there's a teenage kid that's putting on Funhouse or Raw Power for the first time and going, wow, I'm going to turn up my guitar louder, you know?
I still remember the first time I popped in Raw Power and I heard, you know, I'm a Streetwalking Cheetah with a Heart Full of Napalm, and I was hooked right then.
I'm talking with Chris Carey about our classic pick of the week. It is brought to you by Downtown's Good Oak Bar. Good Oak is currently closed, but is grateful to the community for all the support and is wishing everyone good health and safety, as well as justice and peace. The Stooges Funhouse came out on July 7th, 1970. Tomorrow is the 50-year anniversary. One thing I wanted to add to before you get into your first selection, Chris, is if you don't follow Iggy Pop on Instagram, I highly recommend it. Iggy Pop has a cockatoo pet bird named Biggy Pop. Iggy's interactions with his bird are some of the most adorable, heartwarming, and lovely things I have ever seen. Iggy and Biggy Pop on Instagram is well worth your time if you need cheering up. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thank you.